Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. For today's show, Brandt chose an image of Werner von Braun and his wife and children. And for those who don't know, Werner von Braun is basically a Nazi. He was basically an SS scientist, and Werner von Braun was captured by the Americans, and he was one of a number of German scientists who moved to America and were critical in creating NASA. And he himself is a genius of a genius. And so for anyone who thinks that the moon landing didn't take place, etc., you are barking up the wrong tree. This German Nazi that you see in front of you, that man did the impossible. That man did the impossible. On the far right, you'll see an image of a Saturn IV moon rocket. Werner von Braun was the man who built extremely advanced liquid fuel rockets. What he was pulling off was thought by Winston Churchill's top scientific advisor. He basically said this was impossible. They did not believe the stories of these incredible V2 rockets. That German that you see in front of you, he's a total genius, and he invented these things. And in its day, the Saturn moon rocket was the most complex piece of equipment ever built by humans. That thing which took the astronauts to the moon was the biggest and most complex vehicle ever built by humans. I think even nowadays, in terms of the parts that make that thing up, that thing is an unbelievable machine. And that Nazi, Werner von Braun, is behind that thing. Just to give you a little bit of an idea of how far this man was thinking long ago. And I want to tell you that in my studies of Germans and Nazis, somewhere I came across mention that even in the time of Hitler, they were busy thinking about space planes. Even in the time of Hitler, these Nazis were thinking of space planes. And Werner von Braun was the guy who built the V2, which was an amazing piece of equipment. It wasn't so great as a military weapon, but it was the beginning of lots and lots of things that exist nowadays that we take for granted. Intercontinental ballistic missiles, that is what Werner von Braun was building in World War II. Werner von Braun is responsible for putting Americans in space. He is responsible for putting Americans on the moon. This man is a genius of note. He and a bunch of other Nazis were the key guys who worked in NASA, and they were cleverer and more skilled than the white Americans they were working with. These guys were geniuses, especially Werner von Braun. That man is amazing. That man is the father of rocketry and space travel in the Western world. And just to give you a teeny-weeny idea of how clever this man was and how far ahead of time he was thinking, I'm going to show you a very short little video. This is a little video from 1956. 1956. That is 11 years after the end of World War II. And you will see and hear Werner von Braun on American TV talking about the need to build a space station. Nowadays, you've heard of the International Space Station, and the Americans have got one, the Russians had one, the Chinese, I think, have got one. This is the man who was talking about a space station, but check out his space station. His space station is more advanced than anything that's ever been built by anybody. In fact, his space station rotates. And in his space station, it rotates at quite a speed, and people can walk around like they are in a room, because his space station has got gravity. It's got artificial gravity from the rotation. And let me tell you, when astronauts go into space, none of these other space stations have that feature. And so they have to exercise and do all kinds of things to try to not lose muscle, because they lose lots of muscle. Well, Wernher von Braun's space station would have solved that problem and made the health of astronauts so much better. And check out his space station. And his space station has got all kinds of things, including the fact that it is nuclear powered. And this is 1956. This is before anyone even went into space. He was already talking about this kind of stuff. And this man built the things that were coming. This man is a white genius of the highest excellence of note. So check out this very short video and then we'll dive into the show.
This advanced base or space station will be headquarters for the final ascent to the moon. Our space satellite will have the shape of a wheel, measuring 200 feet across. Its outside rim will contain living and working quarters for a crew of 50 men. Just below the radio and radar antenna is the atomic reactor. Its heat will be used to drive a turbo generator, which supplies the station with electricity. Access to the station will be through an airlock in the hub. The three large spokes are elevator shafts, and the small pipes are used as condensers for the turbo generator and the air conditioning plant. The entire wheel will slowly rotate at 3 revolutions per minute. The resulting centrifugal force will produce an artificial gravity for the men in the rim. Notice that the floors are placed so that the men stand with their heads towards the hub. The wheel is divided into 9 sections. The first section is headquarters and communications. The next section will be for Earth weather observation and prediction. Military reconnaissance experts, aided by powerful optical and radar telescopes, will observe every point on the globe as the space station makes its complete trip around the Earth every 2 hours. Next is the emergency hospital section. And then the astronomy division, where men will keep an eye on the rocket ship as it makes its trip around the moon. The rest of the space station will house calculating machines, maintenance facilities, air conditioning equipment, living quarters, and even a botanical and zoological laboratory. This entire space station will have to be prefabricated and tested on the ground. After dismantling, it will be transported in pieces up to the orbit. Construction of the space wheel now begins. The sides of the cargo nose are mechanically separated. Built-in tanks of compressed air inflate this large plastic inner section of the hub. Thin metal plates are immediately clamped on the outside to protect it from meteors. The first workday in space draws to a close. Every 24 hours, another cargo rocket will arrive in the orbit. When the airlock is attached, the pressurized hub section can be used as temporary quarters for eating and sleeping. Each succeeding load is carefully scheduled so that the parts of the station can be assembled in correct order. Nylon ropes prevent the parts from slowly drifting away. Next, the atomic reactor is installed. The wheel begins to take shape now as the three main spokes and rim sections are joined together. Condenser pipes are fitted next, so that the atomic reactor may be put in operation. Even though there's no apparent motion, everything in the orbit is hurtling around the Earth at 16,000 miles per hour. The shell of the station is completed. Now comes the delicate task of installing instruments and the multitude of equipment inside. Finally, two small rocket motors on the rim, blasting for a few seconds, will set the wheel in permanent motion to revolve 3 times a minute.
Before the show, I just want to explain to you what Brandt is trying to do and what his angle of attack is. Because once you understand it, you'll see what Brandt is trying to achieve here. Brandt has basically got a line of thinking that he's created based on psychology and his understanding of people and his experience with children. He's got a line of thinking based on words and the use of words, and he's mentioned before his friend who experimented with this and found out what worked. Essentially, he's trying to do for the white right what Jews and communists and assorted scum have been doing with all kinds of leftist concepts, where they've invented terms and words to start misleading people down the wrong track, to get people to start thinking differently. He's trying to do something to get people to think correctly, but his target audience is different to my target audience. My target audience are people who have woken up to some degree about these things. I do have some people who come and who say that they learned from me. But the difference is that I am not mass converting people on a huge scale. Whereas what Brandt is trying to do is the kind of thing that can be aimed at people on a big scale. So he's using psychological principles. And the first thing is that lots of people, because they are in a capitalist environment, capitalist liberal environment, they've got no conception of race. They've got no conception that there's even an enemy. To them, everything is functioning fine. And so they are living in the capitalist world. They are running to the shopping malls. They are watching football on TV. They are couch potatoes. Their attention span is short. They aren't particularly interested in learning anything. They just want to go about their normal daily rat race like they used to. And so you need to get a message to them, but their attention span is short, they're not really interested, and you've got to slip something into their heads in an instant and get it to start taking hold of them. So that is the kind of psychology that Brandt is functioning with. And these people have been heavily indoctrinated. They know that race is evil, that Nazi is evil, that Hitler is evil. So they've been so indoctrinated that if you say Ku Klux Klan, if you say apartheid, if you say Nazi, if you say Germany, then they've been indoctrinated to know that those things are evil and therefore they must immediately kick back against that. So if they hear Nazi, they don't want to know about it. If they hear anti-Semite, they don't want to know. You could say that their defensive responses have already been conditioned so that they can't be fixed by the right wing, that they are conditioned against the right wing. So what Brandt is doing with his line of thinking is to hit them with something that they don't see coming, something that they've not been conditioned against, and something that grabs their attention quickly and it sits in their head. So that's the thing he's trying to do. And by doing something that when it comes at them, they don't reject it because they've never come across it and they've not been conditioned against it, it now enters their minds. And from here onwards, he can hammer away at them. So that is the first thing. That's the first and most important thing. And by using language in this way, by using all these white well-being kinds of terms, using words like white erasure and all those things, he's now able to fight back using the same level of sophistication that Jews and communists use against whites. So he's coming with his terminology and his words, and these things can slip into the heads of children, can slip into the heads of adults. The next thing is that these terms are also terms that work in a positive sense. He sends in a positive message. It's a moral message. He now taps into the conditioning that they've got. Everyone's been conditioned to think in moral terms, that there is good and there is bad. And so he comes in and he actually even latches on to moral terms and uses it for his benefit. And the benefit is to start saying to whites, looking after yourselves is moral. Looking after your people is moral. So he's not only bypassing the defense mechanism, but he's also latching on to something else that gives him extra power. He's latching on to morality and using morality. And then, as you'll discover in this discussion, he talks about don't be the villain. And what that is achieving is that he's now starting to wake people up. He's now starting to get hold of their minds. They are lazy. Their attention span is short, but he's managing to get past that defense. He's also able to get past defenses of racism and the right wing. And he's even able to tap into things like morality. So he can now say that it is the most moral thing to do to look after your own people, to care for your own people, and that we are not stopping other people from not caring for themselves. Other races must also care for their own people. So it's a message that will not piss off other races and groups. So it's a nice message, it's a moral message, gets through to them, and it's a message that the enemy cannot find fault with. And then the final section of his thinking is where he says, don't play the villain. And what this is about is that the vast majority of whites are programmed against Nazis, race, etc. And the mass media and jury will immediately hit and attack anyone who acts like a Nazi or like a racist or is someone from the Ku Klux Klan. So what he's trying to do here is he's getting a message into their heads. The message is positive. The message is nice. The message cannot be criticized. And his final thing is to tell these people that although they are basically now Nazis and racists, they might not think of themselves as Nazis and racists, but they'll have virtually all of those kinds of values, but just given to them in another way. And by telling them not to be the villain, he's warning them to not do things that will allow Jews and their allies to zoom in on them and attack them. It basically means that by not being the villain, they are going to have all of the knowledge that they need racially to survive. But even if he converts 100 million people, jury is not going to be able to detect them. Jury is not going to be able to even know that they exist, literally, because they're not going to walk around doing Nazi salutes, and they're not going to be doing things that can be attacked. And it means that this message, which is designed to be able to reach all these different kinds of people, that once this message starts getting out, this message can convert vast numbers of people, but convert them in a way that they can't be attacked, nobody can detect them, and yet they will be functioning quietly, doing their thing, and doing positive things. And there's literally no way to detect them or to stop them. At best, jury would have to start targeting some of the words maybe, but there'll be no reason to target those words because these people are not going to do anything that they can point to as evil and wrong. So it's to literally create something that can't be stopped, and it can move through a vast mass of whites, and Jewry and their allies will have nothing with which to attack them. And it's aimed at going for the lazy, the disinterested, etc. But the key benefit of this approach is that he's got a tool that he's invented that can now go and convert large numbers of people. And also, it's a tool that can't be stopped. So this is basically what it boils down to. So the show is really Brandt's show. Brandt wanted to do this show. So I stepped aside and he's the boss. So here's the show, and you'll see the kinds of things we discuss. And in the description below the video is the link to his video about Don't Be the Villain. The final things I'll say from my side is that he's created something that can function on a vast scale without it running into conflict with Jewry or any other race. However, when it comes to me and my supporters, the fact of the matter is that I operate, let's call it, beyond morality. Nietzsche wrote a book called Beyond Good and Evil, where he defined the new good and the new evil for the future of the world. So my messages are much harder, and my stuff is more for the converted, because there are things that we have to do that are nasty, and it's part of life. And these are the same things that Hitler and other whites had to do. At some point, you will eventually you will come into conflict with people. But in Brandt's case, his goal is mass conversion. Get a message to people as fast as possible on a vast scale so that they're on the white side. All other discussions are for further down the road, and that's my world. But his goal is to get something out that can move quickly among lots of people, whether they are young, whether they are old, no matter how lazy they are, that's what the game is.
Hi, Jan. Thanks for having me on the show again. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thanks, Brent. And it's your show, and you're the boss. And I'm behaving myself. I'm doing well, and I don't want the paddle to hit me.
Okay, that's right. Okay, I'm glad that everyone's on their best behavior. Everybody keep your hands and legs inside the ride at all times and stay in your seats. All right. The reason that Jan and I are doing this show is because I have been making some notes concerning the last two videos that Jan made in February of 2025 concerning his interactions with groups of Zimbabweans that wanted to overthrow the government of Mugabe. And the notes that I've been making are not specifically about historical events, but about psychology that underpins people's behavior in those events. And I'm hoping to bring a different way of looking at things, a different insight that can explain people's behavior and help us get to the outcomes that we want. All right, good so far?
It's sounding good to me.
Okay, excellent. All right. So I'm going to repeat myself, something that I've said a couple times before, and I think that you'll probably agree with me in this point, Jan. And it's that white people like to think of themselves as good. They like to think of themselves as moral. And if they have been propagandized for a very long time, which some of them have, some of them have been propagandized for decades, some of them have only been propagandized for a short bit of time because they haven't been alive very long. So they've been propagandized their entire life. And if they're told that they're evil or bad because they're white and they've stolen everything magically from everybody else and we have to turn over our lands and our organizations and our churches and our daughters and everything to the non-whites, then those people that are susceptible to this, which is a good chunk of the white population on the planet, if they're susceptible to this, then the message that they play inside their minds is that, well, I'm a good person and I'm moral, therefore I have to lower myself, I have to subjugate myself to this anti-white narrative. I have to do all of these things that destroys my well-being, the well-being of my family, myself personally, my country, and Western civilization. I have to do all of these things if I'm a good person. So therefore, I'm going to do A, B, C, D, etc. And no matter how painful it is to me, no matter how many of my people get raped, get killed, how much money gets taken from my race and then redistributed to non-whites through taxation, I'm going to continue to do that because I'm just going to bury my head and keep telling myself that I'm moral and somehow it's just going to be okay. And also, I'm a little bit of a coward and I don't want to stick my neck out and I'm actually kind of lazy. I'm physically lazy because I'm also intellectually lazy. And in my spare time, I just want to entertain myself and drink some beer and eat donuts and Cheetos and watch sports ball. And my wife, she's going to watch reality TV and yell at the TV, and the kids are going to stare at cell phones all day long. And we're all going to just keep our heads down and pretend that all the messaging that we receive is the right messaging. So my point here is that we have to craft the message to the vast majority of whites that are commonly called the normies. I don't call them normies because it's not normal. I call them typical whites. They're typical and they're much less than what they should be. So I personally am disappointed in most of the white people on this planet. They are pathetic in a lot of different ways. But that's what we have to work with. We can't just wish that everyone pulls their heads out of their ass at the same time. We can't wish them to start having courage. We can't wish them to start standing up for themselves. We can't wish them to actually investigate history and find out what happened and what didn't happen. So we have this substandard group of people, which I would say is maybe it's 60, 65% of our population. We've got to craft a message that they are going to understand. And the message has to be one in which they begin to realize that the most moral thing to do, that the thing for them to do to stay a good person is to take care of themselves, is to take care of their family, is to take care of their race, and to understand that their race, our race, white people, Western kind, we built Western civilization, that all of these other people want to live in, plus the civilization that we built has spread out over the entire planet. The technologies and the transportation and the medicine and the entertainment and the electronics and the food distribution, all of that is because of us. Everyone else uses it now, except for third world countries, and they take it for granted. So I'm kind of rambling here, and I'll come back to talk about specifics later on. But the messaging that they need to get is that we don't need to disparage other races specifically. We don't need to attack other races or bitch and moan about other races, but instead focus on our well-being and what we need. It's our right to defend ourselves. It's our right to defend our money. It's all right for us to defend our territory, our institutions. We should have a right to hang out with who we choose. We should have a right to have our own businesses that are for our own people, our own territories, our own Oranias, our own countries should be just for ourselves if that's what we want. We made that, excuse me, our ancestors made that. It is our birthright. It's not the birthright of non-whites. It's not the birthright of border crossers. It's not the birthright of people who come into our countries and start to parasite off of us. It's ours. Now, we can't necessarily start talking about parasitism because that has a very negative connotation and people are not going to understand that, even though if they have taken biology classes and they truly understand the relationships between parasites and hosts, they will see that what is going on in white countries is exactly parasitic relationships. Other people are coming in and benefiting off of us, and we don't get anything out of that, but we're actually hurt in a variety of different ways. So I think of an analogy sometimes. Let's say that you're on a mission sometime in the past, and you have to cross this unknown territory across some fields and valleys and forests, etc., and you don't have enough food to carry over this trip that's going to take a few weeks. So you have to know what animals you can hunt, what animals are going to kill you. There's going to be some poisonous plants. There's going to be some plants you can eat to keep yourself alive as you travel from your beginning to your final destination. And you know that as you're traveling across this unknown land, that some really mean, despicable people have intentionally planted poisonous trees, poisonous plants along the way. But you've been given a guidebook, so as you're going through this territory, you have these little pictures and descriptions. So you can look at that plant, and you can look at those leaves, and you can look over here. Okay, that's poisonous, that's poisonous, that's not poisonous, I can eat that one. That one over there is poisonous. So you can avoid the poisonous plants as you move along. Now, what you could do in your, you know, spare time as you're on this journey, and after you get to your final destination, you like to talk about it, is you could complain about all the poisonous plants along the way. You could point out this, here's this list. I compiled the list of 322 poisonous plants along the way, and I wrote a poem about each of these poisonous plants, and I'm going to spend my time thinking about these poisonous plants, and that's going to consume all of my energy. Or I could just focus on the two or three plants that was okay to eat. And I don't care about the rest of that crap. That's not important right now. And if I got to send information back to the people in the other village so they can follow my tracks, I'm not going to send them this, you know, huge volume of here's all the poisonous plants and here's who put the plants in there and look how bad it is. Isn't it terrible? And here's a few more extra books where you can read about all these bad things that you're not supposed to eat. And then here's this little, you know, one page pamphlet of the plants that you should eat. All they need is the plants that they should eat. They don't need all that other stuff. They don't need all the, you know, the negativity or the criticisms about that right now. They just need to get from point A to point B. So the weird analogy that I'm trying to make there is that if we focus on the positivity right now, that's the message that's most going to resound with your typical whites. That's the message that will get to that filtration system, that psychological filtration system of your typical whites that are, you know, kind of dumb, kind of lazy, not really paying attention, like to be entertained in their spare time, think of themselves as good people and moral people. They like to tell themselves these little stories. And again, if you craft the message that, hey, you know, actually taking care of yourself and taking care of this Western civilization is the most moral thing to do, that's going to start to make sense to them. It's got to be in a way where they don't throw up the psychological barrier and say, no, Nazi, racist, white supremacist, you're a piece of crap, I'm not listening to you. Because a lot of them will do that. They have this little hair trigger response to react negatively and to ignore you right away. And did you want to say anything yet, Johan? You want me to keep going here?
It's all up to you. I'm listening and I'm making lots of notes, actually. I've got many, many comments.
Okay, all right.
So I'm trying not to interrupt. I'm actually trying to behave myself today.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'll say one more thing and then I'll turn it over. In your video, the very first one where you're talking about working with the individual called JJ, I don't remember his last name, when he was interested in
Sibanda.
Overthrowing. So what's that?
He called himself Sibanda, JJ Sibanda, but that all of those are fake names. I don't know. Those are the names that he used, but those weren't their real names. But that's what he used. They were also using fake names.
All right, code name JJ Sibanda. You were lamenting sometime during that video that he and his people got money donated to them by whites. They got plenty of publicity. They got the reporters there. They got the television coverage. He went on radio programs, and all he had to do was be black, and then have some sort of political action, and then everyone just flocked to him. Now, at the same time, you're talking about, well, on the white right, you have to just struggle and beg and fight, and they just ignore you. They do not, the public does not give a shit about what you have to say. And the reason for this is because that public, those typical whites, they've been conditioned to think, well, if you're standing up for white interests, that means that you're Nazi or racist or something like that. It's just all equated together, instantly bad. And if you're standing up for non-white interests, well, that's okay because they're poor and they're downtrodden and they're like the little beaten puppy that has lost its way home, and you need to pick it up and pet it, and here's some money, here's some food, and I'll love it and squeeze it, and oh, I feel so sorry for you, and here's the little retarded kid, be nice to the retarded kid, all of this extremely feminine behavior. And my point. I think I have a point here. In this instance, is the message has to be, once again, crafted differently if you're trying to support white interests, if you're trying to support or advocate for white well-being. It's got to come from a place that these typical whites will say, hey, I recognize that as a moral argument, instead of, oh, this is an argument about, Hitler was good and Jews are bad and Jews need to be run through a meat grinder and, those sorts of things. So I know that I'm not giving too many details right now, but I'm trying to get at the point of that, the very, very foundation, the basics of the psychology of your typical white people, which is the audience that we need to craft the messages for. Because I can listen to your videos about World War II or Napoleon or other individuals, the Roman Empire from time to time. And I understand that. I have no problem with that. I'm a member of Western kind. I'm a man of the West. Those are my people. I totally get it. I'm not brainwashed. But your typical white people, they're just too damn intellectually lazy, slightly cowardly. They don't want to put out the effort. And they will mentally shut down immediately. So if they're watching TV or they see some books and they see these black people that want to overthrow Mugabe, and then they see a white person who's helping these people, or he's in the white right, they're going to ignore that white person because they instantly say that white person is trying to help white people. He's evil. Oh, he's evil right away, because that's their immediate reaction without thinking about what that person is saying, without looking at the specific details. So from the very beginning, what I'm saying is you can't come out too strong, and you have to be careful with the words that you choose. And language is extremely important. And the messaging, I would say, should not be about anything about World War II, because you cannot tell the truth about World War II to these people because they're intellectually lazy. Some of them are just too, excuse my French, they're just too goddamn stupid, and they don't care about the truth. And unfortunately, we cannot achieve white well-being on a global scale the way that we need it. We can't activate these people to start taking care of themselves in our countries if they instantly shut down when we're trying to talk to them about, hey, these are the things we need to do as white people to take care of ourselves. So I wouldn't even talk about those sorts of things, even though it's interesting, even though it's part of history, even though it's accurate. So, Jan, you've got a whole different thing, going with your website and the information that you bring, but maybe some other people that are listening to these words right now will understand. We can't just cater to people who know the truth about World War II, because that's a tiny, tiny little slice. And those of us that know the truth about World War II, we have no political power. We don't have all the money. We don't have the TV stations, the radio stations. We don't own newspapers. We don't have government contracts worth billions of dollars. We don't have all of these things that, you know, anti-whites have, or white people like Elon Musk or Donald Trump, who don't really give a shit about white people. They just care about their own kind of flavor of civic nationalism and earning a lot of money for the country that they associate with. So anyway, I've kind of rambled a little bit, and I think it's time for you to respond, Jan, and so I can go into some more detail about these things.
Okay, Brent. Now, I was listening with great interest, and let me go through my notes that I've made here. I fully understand what you are trying to achieve, because we are dealing with slightly different angles here. In my case, I'm trying to take whites who are a small group who are open to the kinds of things that I'm talking about, so that I can take them and show them a whole bunch of other stuff as well, which they would never see. So I'm dealing with more of a niche group of whites, the ones who are willing to deal with, the ones who can sit and have already been exposed to and have taken in the various truths, if you will, whether they found the truth about World War II, or the truth about the Holocaust, or Jews, or banking, or blacks, or the South, or whatever, or Rhodesia, or South Africa. But I do understand what you're trying to do, and you're trying to go after the problem. You're trying to basically angle a message that can really get out there in a big way, in a big way that's going to mass change white society. And so that is a big job. And I fully understand why you are tackling it in this way, because this is going to be the only way that you are trying to reach the people that we in the white right can't reach. We're getting new people coming in from there, but you want to go and slam dunk them and really really catch them in a way that that's going to get their attention. And as you note, their attention span is very short, and they are very lazy, and they are not really interested, and they don't really care, because, you know, maybe football today is much more important than anything else to them, or a lady is watching Oprah and Oprah is more important to her. And you need to kind of sneak in a thing to like grab their mind for a second, and just be able to like plant a little seed or two in their minds for a second. So I fully understand your reasoning behind this, and this is where your teacher and psychology background is so critical, because you deal with kids and people face to face, and you know how their minds really work. And, you know, how are you going to get through to these people? And of course, the other benefit is, you know, this is also a bit of a thing that that I would like to refer to as a thing that all whites have everywhere. All whites everywhere have got a home ground advantage. You have got the home ground advantage that you know the finer details of the average American. And also the fact, of course, I was actually thinking, I was watching another video that you did where you were talking about the soccer team. And by the way, I'm very impressed with your British accent. you know, you've lived in England, you've lived in England, and you've lived in America. You've got a good grasp of, let's call it, Anglo whites. And so you know how they think and how their internal how their civilizations really are. And so you are you're actually targeting perhaps the most important whites that need to be cornered, because the Anglo whites are the ones, you know, Jews have literally taken English and turned it into, the Jewish into a Jewish language. English is literally the Jewish broadcasting medium, basically, if you look at it in that sense. So, you're trying to hit into a very critical group of people, but also a group of people who've been extremely propagandized. I very much like the fact that you focus on the positive and that you are saying it doesn't matter about all the poisonous plants and all the bad things. You don't have to focus your entire life on the poisonous plants and on the crimes and on the negatives. What you really need in order to function is you just need to know what is it that you must do that's going to work for you. If you know that, look, there are 100 different poisonous plants out there, but these are the three that if I eat these three, I'm going to be okay. Then that's all you need in order to survive. And I like that, and I like the positive. I do try in my way to also focus on the positive, as because large parts of the white right focus on the fear factor and the scaring of people. And I don't like that. I don't like it. I don't like it for many reasons. Firstly, because it's not true. And I get so angry when people start saying that everyone's going to die. That this is especially a South African thing. And I say to myself, it's not true. And just because some people are dying and some people have been killed and there is danger, is not to say that you can extrapolate that and say everyone's going to die or almost everyone's going to die. That is a separate psychological angle that another group of whites in South Africa came up with, and lots of others have tapped into that kind of angle. Oh, it's genocide, it's genocide, we're all going to die, we're all going to die. And I don't like it because it's not true. Being harmed and being attacked, there are hundreds, maybe even thousands of whites every day who are being attacked or killed in the world as a whole. But that alone is not going, we're a big enough entity that that alone is not going to destroy our people. So it is a threat. It's like we're in a war. But just because people are dying every day, the actual rate of death is not high enough that you need to everyone run off and lock all your doors and stay in the house and never come out. It's not like that. So I like to tell people that yes, there's danger, but we can overcome the danger. And it's also not the first time in our history that we face danger. Our ancestors have faced much worse dangers than we're facing now. You can go and read lots of history where whites were on the edge of existence, like really on the edge of existence, and whites could hang in there, and sometimes people failed, and many times, most times, people survived. So I like the focus on the positive, and also that you get them away from just focusing endlessly on the negative, because there are many other things about the negative that then become a mantra. And I then get to the point where there are people who are like, oh, there's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. The Jews control everything. Everything. The Jews control everything. We're so fucked. So then what do? Then they do nothing. Do you want to dive in there? I have more to say, but if you want to.
Let me yeah. Since you brought up Jews, now I would not disagree with anyone who wants to expound on it, just how much the Jews control. It's unbelievable. It's just mind-boggling how much the Jews control. But what I would posit is that let's look at why the Jews were able to do that. Now, of course, we've had misleaders. We've had presidents and chancellors and prime ministers and kings and royalty and queens that have aligned themselves for hundreds of years with the Jewish interests because Jews had money and they wanted that Jewish money. So they were willing to take the Jewish money to screw over their own people. That's true. Okay. But
Dead on, dead on.
exactly. So what's going on right now? That's nothing new. We've had selfish assholes in charge of our countries for a long time, and it's like our people don't learn the lesson, and we have to do something in the future to fix how people get elected or how they get appointed, and what do we do to them when they start to screw us over and align with non-whites. But that's a separate topic, a separate discussion. What Jews do is they are, well, a term that some people use, like Blair Cottrell down in Australia would say, Jews are very successful because they're racist and they don't want white people to be racist because racism is a Jew superpower. Now, I don't use the term racist or racism because in people's minds that is associated just with white people being very bad, being evil. There's in the past several years, some people in America, usually black people, have advocated that blacks cannot be racist because they don't hold institutional power. Only white people can be racist because they hold institutional power. Therefore, everything else that non-whites do, that's perfectly okay. We're not being racist. So it's bullshit, of course, but my point is that if you want to use the term racist, it's got too much baggage. It's got negative connotations, and people will say they're being reverse racist. Look at them. No, she's like, stop saying that. Just say anti-whiteism. People know exactly what you say, what you mean when you say anti-white or anti-whiteism or anti-white narrative, anti-white propaganda. It's a really, really useful word. It's not ambiguous at all. It's a good one to use. So, what the heck is my point? My point is, if white people actually took care of each other like Jews take care of each other, bam, we would turn this around in a few weeks. If there's a Jew anywhere on the planet that is in the public eye and they get in trouble because they did something naughty, which they do very, very often, the other Jews will flock to them. Now, as white people, we think that's disgusting. That's below us. I wouldn't do that. You're taking care of this, I don't know, it's a pedophile or a rapist or a murderer or someone who stole billions of dollars in a Ponzi scheme, or this person set up a business and destroyed this little town because he brought in 100,000 illegals and now the town's destroyed from what it used to be. I mean, there's a myriad of ways in which Jews get in trouble, get in hot water because they think that it's okay for them to just use the whole world as their playground. The whole world is their toilet. They can just shit on any civilization that they're in because they're chosen by God and they have a right to do that. That's something separate. That's something that will be resolved later on. But what I'm talking about is that the other Jews don't care that this person is a complete asshole. They're coming to help them out because it's a Jew. They have the racial solidarity. They have this belief that's been developed over thousands of years, that they are a small people, they are oppressed everywhere, and they don't intermix with others. They're not open to others joining their community, even though they are racial, and then there's religion or layers of religion slapped on top of that core. They keep themselves separate because that's part of their existential defense. That's how they keep themselves alive and separate and as a separate people over all of this time, over these thousands of years, and all the countries that they've been in, they are still a thriving people, specifically because they were so racially focused and they're so quick to come to each other's defense, whether that's moral or not, they decide to do that. And white people need to realize that that is an appropriate attitude and appropriate behavior for whites to start using. So instead of white people white people thinking, like, well, no, the best thing for me to do is just let my people be wiped out and let's commit suicide. Let's commit racial suicide. No, start adopting practices that other people use that allows them to be successful. That's what we need to do. Look, if you're an athlete or you're on a sports ball team and you go up against another athlete or a team and they kick your ass, and they kick your ass every single time, are you going to ignore what they're doing, or are you going to look at how do they practice? What strategies do they use? What food do they eat? What type of training schedules do they have? If you want to compete with them, you're going to have to start adopting what they're doing. Or let's say someone who's in a series of battles, you're a commander in a series of battles, and you're losing for a while, but you're not completely demolished yet. You need to understand your enemy. You need to see what they're doing. Why in the hell would you ignore examples of the successful people when it's right there in front of your face over and over and over? So it's perfectly reasonable to point out what Jews do, and like, this is all the poisonous plants. We can make it documentation of this. These are actual facts, but these cannot be dealt with. We can't do anything about all the shit that Jews are doing right now because white people will not get off of their ass, and the white people don't realize that they are a people. Jews sure as shit know that they're a people. Whites, no, we're not a people. Everyone else is. Mexicans are, Chinese are. The people in the Congo are, Koreans are, white people, no, we're all just individuals. We're individuals. No human is illegal, etc., etc. So white people need to adopt the same attitudes that all the other races have, especially focus on the success that Jews have had. And I can at least admire that aspect of Jewish behavior. Because they do go to the mat for each other. They do put out a lot of freaking effort for each other, where white people are too goddamn selfish to raise a finger to help each other out. One white person's getting his ass kicked in public right next to you, other white people will just ignore him, let him get stomped to death. 12 other blacks will stomp the shit out of one white guy, and all the other white people, they just don't do anything except record it on their cell phone. Or a white person gets in trouble. You don't have lawyers coming to help them out. You don't have any white judges, throwing the decisions like Jewish judges do. So my point is that whites need to adopt this winning strategy of being extremely in-group preferenced like Jews do. Start seeing the positive things that Jews do for their people and adopt it for our people.
I'm with you there. A few comments. Just a quick note about, the fact that we've got these problems in our society. These problems in our society have come about because we've let an alien race into our society. I keep thinking of the Jews as the enemy within. That hidden inside Western civilization is another enemy. And it's an enemy that the vast number of whites don't even know about. And that enemy is playing us, and they're playing and breaking down the natural trust and the natural values that are part of our society. So the enemy within is because we've allowed an alien to get into our race. And so now by tolerating this enemy within, now we're getting all kinds of weird problems that our society didn't even imagine were possible. So I'm just adding that in. And another thing regarding your approach, where you say that whites are pathetic, etc. They're not what they should be, and that what I like very much about your message is that we must face reality and work with what we have. Now that is very realistic. I like that very much, Brandt, because it doesn't help to say, oh, well, if I remember a long time ago when South Africa used to be very, very wealthy, and I worked in various companies, then suddenly a white guy that I'm working with will say, you know, if I had R1 million, I would do this. And if I, and another guy, you know, if I had R1 million, I would do that. Well, you know, I can also say, you know, if I had a fairy godmother, and if I could, if I had the powers of Superman and Batman, then I could do this and I can do that. But you know what? We can only do what we can do. Okay. And we got to work with what we have. And the situation we're in is, and the other thing to remember is, the situation that we're in is not one that we created. We were born into this. And it doesn't help to say, oh, and then there are all kinds of people who engage in all kinds of other delusional thinking. Oh, well, you know, if only the world was a better place, you know, it's so terrible. Hey, hold on, hold on, hold on. You are part of a race that has lived through all kinds of nasty situations. And you know what? Our fathers, grandfathers, great grandfathers, I'll bet you they all had problems that they didn't like. But sitting and wishing for something else isn't going to get us anywhere. You got to take what you got, work with what you got, and move the hell on. And don't sit in and engage in all kinds of other nonsense. There's all kinds of nonsense thinking that you can engage in. Oh, if I had this, if the world could be like that. Oh, and it's all wrong because, you know, I'm not going to church enough or something like that. You know what? Cut all that out. The world is what it is. Accept it for what it is and work with it. Our race has overcome so many problems. Just work with the freaking thing. Take it as it is and start moving along. You know, stop crying and start working. And you'll see that you're going to make some headway, you know. So I like you. I like your approach. Face reality. Take it as it is. See what you can do with it. That's the game of life. Get used to it. That's how it's always been. Another thing, you know, just reiterating what you were saying is that you are focusing in order to slam dunk this thing. This is almost like you're going out. You want the white well-being movement to basically get out there and slam dunk this thing, almost like a counter revolution of whites. And how do you get through to the whites that have not only been propagandized, but our enemies not only propagandized them, but even propagandized them to the point where they are already conditioned to know what we are going to say to try and win them back. And they're already conditioned. Ah, you see that white person, he's only in favor of whites. Ah, he's a racist. We must stay away from him. That's the level of propagandization that has taken place. And so what you're saying is craft a message that works in a certain way. It's got to work in a certain way, so that it can slip past the mental blocks that have already been put in place,
right.
So that it can get through. It's almost you know, it's like a targeted. It's almost like a targeted weapon, you know, like a cruise missile. It's like a cruise missile that's following the contours of the land, and it's gonna hit that tank, and it's gonna be coming out from an angle that the tank or the vehicle isn't going to be able to see, and boom, it's going to be gone. That's what you're aiming at.
Right. Or to use a biology analogy, it's like a molecule that's going through the bloodstream, and it's got to go through a protein transporter to get inside the cell. You know, it's got to have the right receptor. You know, cells have certain receptors on them, and if it's not the right molecule, it won't get inside the cell. So you've got to get the right your molecule there or the right ion, and then boom, and then it goes inside the cell. Otherwise, everything is just blocked out for, you know, any biologist out there.
No, I'm with you. And just some other points still. The whole issue of we built civilization. Yes. You know, and that's the thing to keep reminding people. No, the blacks from Africa did not come and build America. The vast majority of people who did all the freaking work in America were whites. Yes, you may have had some slaves at some point in time. If you didn't have the slaves, you would still have built America. America was your thing. You did what you needed to do. I will just add into that a point about Hitler. I was looking a lot into Hitler and some of the things that Hitler was discussing. And one thing that I do want to just mention briefly, I will come back and mention it more. Hitler did not have a problem with the Aryans conquering other people and using other people. Hitler did not have a problem with whites conquering other people and using them as they saw fit. He had no issue with that. So all the moral nonsense around slavery and all that, don't get hung up on that stuff. Hitler is a future human, and Hitler's way ahead of everybody else. And Hitler wants us to win and expand. Make no mistake. I will return to that topic because I've done a lot of digging into Hitler's thinking along certain lines. And Hitler, Ben Carson of Creativity also spoke about expanding whites. I don't know Dr. William Pierce well enough to say what he thought. I think he would be okay with it. I don't think he had any problems with it. But Dr. William Pierce is a guy that I'm starting to look more and more into his work. I want to get deeper into Dr. William Pierce's stuff. Some of what I've looked at, I've looked at his stuff for quite a while, but never like properly in depth. But I want to go and dig more into his stuff. So let me put it this way. Western civilization was built by us. Whether we had slaves who worked, and whether we had slaves who worked for us, or whether we were like whites in colonial Africa who used blacks as cheap labor. We didn't have official slaves, but we used them as cheap labor. But whatever we did, okay, we did it to build that civilization. And if we weren't there planning it and driving the whole process and making this whole process work, because it's complex to make work, even if you've got slaves, even if you've got somebody else. There's a lot of work that goes into doing this. You cannot build buildings without having all the theoretical and engineering knowledge for that, etc. So we are the drivers of civilization. We created it. Whether we used help willingly or unwillingly is not the issue. It is our civilization. And if we didn't drive it, nobody else can get to the same thing, and nobody else has got anything they can show for it as well. So I just wanted to say that. Then you were talking about the white right and saying that the public is conditioned that anything white is bad, and that instead good is defined as anyone who's in pain and suffering. And that is that that's an that's a another thing about our values currently that I don't like at all. I call it the worship, worshiping the useless, the worshiping of the worship of failure and uselessness is something that has crept into our civilization and become so bad that when you see someone begging on the street, it's, oh, let's help that guy, poor guy, what happened to him? And you should actually be careful about worshiping uselessness. You should also ask questions like, why is that person in that situation? Did that person, maybe that person is lazy, be careful of the worship of uselessness. Hitler also raised this with regard to Christianity, where Hitler said that Christianity, if led to its logical conclusion, would result in the production of failure. He said something almost exactly like that. It's a quite a complex quote, but so I've just wanted to make those points. Final few points quickly. The story about blacks can't be racist because they never held political power. Just more hogwash. Okay, you'll see that the other side is always busy coming up with a new bullshit argument, with a new bullshit argument as to why they're junk. Why a certain thing cannot be used why whites can always be smacked. That's what it boils down to. And I saw this thing being used among blacks 20 and 30 years ago. And you can see that initially they didn't define it like that. And then when whites tried to start countering them and saying, oh, but you're a racist, then some clever wise ass bullshitter came out with this additional rule. And so what it means is that basically blacks and Jews and everyone or whoever can never be guilty of racism. Only whites can be guilty of racism. So it's just more hogwash. And all of these things are just part of the game. Life is a war and this is a game. And so when you go out and you come up with an argument, Jews will be back in there with counter arguments and counter bullshit. And that's the thing to keep in mind. Almost finished. Jews flocking around a Jewish crook, etc. The big thing I want to say about whites is, if whites could just learn two basic lessons, stick together and don't rat each other out. Stick together and don't rat each other out. Then we're good to go. And the final thing I'll say is, I agree with you, Brandt. We can win in a couple of weeks. We can win easy peasy on all fronts against Jews and blacks and anything else. As long as if we stuck to just some basic, simple rules, we would win, and we'd win on a grand scale. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Let's see. I made a couple of notes about your comments, about my comments. When you were talking about the enemy within, whites have allowed the enemy within. I think that's because white people have not looked at themselves as a people, as a separate people. They don't have that identity there, especially in America. That's been very prevalent, and we've been propagandized to think that way. And a lot of that has to do with the huge influx of Jews from Eastern Europe in the early 1900s. It was psychological warfare against us on purpose. And of course, we've been sold out by the people in power for different reasons, because your globalists and your capitalists profit by diluting the white populations. People that are non-whites don't fight against bad living conditions as much as whites would. We expect more. We built the Western civilization, and we have ways in which we think things should be run, where other people, they don't necessarily have those same standards, and they are more avid consumers, and they are a source of never-ending cheap labor if you keep bringing them in. So we've been propagandized in several ways. But one of the things, the foundational things that I want to do with the School of the West is to bring back that sense of identity to our people. I wrote down some notes to you before the show. An analogy, again, here's another science analogy. It's like when a solar system is being formed inside of a stellar nebula. It's mostly hydrogen gas with other elements there, and it's all getting condensed. It's swirling around and getting condensed. And in the very center of this accretion disk, you're going to have a coalescing of gas that's going to become hotter and hotter. And this is where a star, or maybe a binary star system, a couple stars are going to form. And it doesn't become a star until those hydrogen atoms get crushed together with such pressure and temperature that they fuse, a nuclear fusion happens. And then that produces the photons for the light and the intense heat. And until the fusion happens, it's just a collection of very dense hydrogen gas. But when the fusion happens, bam, that's the switch that takes it from being a protostar to an actual star. And I think of a switch in the psychology of the entire white race on the planet. You know, I want to throw that switch, because once we're a people, it's like, you know, this robot that's been asleep the whole time, boom, the lights, you know, shine out of its eyeballs, and it, all the systems become activated. Like, oh, shit. Oh, wait a second. I'm a white person and I belong to this race with all these other white people. And I've inherited this from all of my ancestors who did all of this work for me so I could be here right now. And I am responsible for all of the white people that come after me. I've got a job to do right now. I've got to defend my people right now. Whereas, you know, most people are just fat and useless at this point. So I want to flip that switch. And when we flip that switch, so many things are going to be taken care of. There's not going to be any more enemy within. And because part of that identity is going to be looking closely at, wait a second, you know, why are you people sometimes pretending to be fellow whites? And then the rest of the time, you're not fellow whites. And why do you do all these things that undermine us? Okay, our radar is up right now. We're looking closely at what you're doing. And now we're looking at history and we're going to look at it in a new way. And we're going to start taking our people's side of the story throughout history instead of your side of the story. And you need to explain to us why you are in our countries. What are you doing here? Why are you not in your own country? Every single people, take America for example, all the people that are here, except for some American Indians that have been here for about 14,000 years as they crossed the Bering Land Bridge, they can all go back to someplace else. They all came here. They don't need to be here. We don't need any of them here. Not one. Not one single one of them. And they all have home countries. Even the Jews have Israel now. So they're parasiting is what they're doing because white people have been so good, so successful at building strong economies, safe countries, safety nets of welfare, high trust societies, low crime, everything that's attractive in a civilization, you name it. So all these people come to parasite off of us. They're not going to be able to parasite after our switch gets turned on and we realize who we are, that we are a people. Everyone's got to wake up from this weird dream, this nightmare that we've been living through and denying ourselves. Part of that too is going to be throwing off the shackles of feminism. And Yolan, when you were talking about the, you know, the useless people and this fetishization of weak people and useless people, I see that as an attack on white men. White men built the civilization that the rest of the planet is using right now. So in the minds of weak people, if we're just talking about, you could say a classroom or a group of kids or whatever, you know, something more personal. A lot of people, unless they have a very strong sense of themselves, they're going to be jealous of someone else who's better looking or more popular or has more money or, you know, cleaner looking tennis shoes or, you know, a new car, or they have the boyfriend or the girlfriend that you wanted, or they got the job that you wanted, and you're going to think ill of them. You're going to try to attack them or undermine them or steal from them, or girls can be catty and start rumors about them because you're jealous. You feel slightly humiliated when you're around them. And this is how people feel towards white men. And this stuff was kicked off in the United States mostly by Jews. And the white women went along with it. They bought it hook, line, and sinker because this was a way in which white women could air their grievances against white men and attack them and also feel that they're the equal of men in all these different ways that they're not. So part of this, which I classify under the umbrella of anti-whiteism, is that a strong white man is bad. If you're a white man, then you have toxic masculinity if you act like a man. So you have to act like a little metrosexual weenie. All the other men of different races, they can do whatever they want. That's just fine. But you can't be a strong white man. So all of our laws that have been written, that have been passed in Congress in the past couple decades have supported all of these groups except for white men. If you go back and you read the laws, which is super exciting to do, you'll see that here's all of these protected groups that are going to benefit from this passage of this new law. This money is going to be allocated for them. Oh, and also for women. But white men is not listed in that category because we have this fetishization of everyone who's weak. We have to attack the white men. And that's what it's really about. this fetishization, a hard word to say, everyone who's weak or non-white, or you can't make fun of these people over here, and this person's protected, and you triggered this person, and this guy thinks he's a dog, and this guy thinks he's a woman, and this guy thinks he's a space alien, and all that stuff is fine, but being a strong white male, no, we can't have that. So I think that's where that comes from. I will say one other thing, and this is off on a tangent. I would never advocate for slavery or trying to take over other people or quote using them. When I do little classes or lessons or try to come up with moral arguments, one of the things I say to kids is, imagine in this scenario where there's some blacks and some whites together, imagine that you were black, or imagine that you were a black from one of the tribes and you lived in Rhodesia. How would you feel about that? Okay, if you thought that your people lived in this area and then some English people came in, and then, 60 years later, they built this little tiny first world country, would you be happy with that? Would you be sad with that? Would you feel humiliated? Would you feel embarrassed that your people never did jack shit and then these white people built this? Would you be resentful? Would you be happy? So I try and talk about, you're a white person right now, but don't just discredit people as though they're not humans because they're different. Now, when I do that with myself, I still come to the same conclusions, because I'm a person who cares about fairness. And I see how all these other people, like I said, are parasiting off of white people, and it's not fair. And if they don't adhere to white standards and take care of white people, they shouldn't be in our countries at all. That, to me, that is the moral argument. And I do from time to time talk about slavery, and I think it's important to talk about slavery, but the truth about slavery, that slavery has been around forever, and it's actually still around in Africa right now, instead of letting the anti-whites run with the narrative that the only slavery that ever happened is when these evil white people grabbed these black people for no reason whatsoever. They just went over and threw nets on them, and then they brought them over in ships, and then they started picking cotton and tobacco, and then we whipped them and beat them all the time. And at the end, that's what happened, because that's a bunch of bullshit. So I would prefer to put a spotlight on slavery or any other topic that people think is uncomfortable or taboo, and bring it out, into the light so people can look at it. All right, I'll shut up here and see if you have something to say, and then I have a couple more points before we're done.
Okay, no problem. All right, I really liked your analogy about the sun, that, basically you just got a lot of hydrogen gas until it's under enough pressure. And then when that pressure is enough, boom, you get fusion, and it's like flipping a switch, and suddenly there's action that never was there before. I love that analogy. It's very awesome. I remember a similar, not quite as effective, but a similar kind of thinking where people spoke about, the finest sword comes from metal that's been in a furnace, and it's been beaten, and eventually it comes out as a beautiful, excellent sword, So there's basically a process that you go through, and then when that process takes place, then boom, you're going to see stuff. And what I want to say to you about that particular line of thinking, because I want to bring up Carol Quigley a lot more in future videos, and there are specific things of Professor Carol Quigley that I want to throw into videos, and you'll see why. It's because there are useful concepts that he came up with that add value, that allow us to think about humans and herds of humans in meaningful ways. So a particular thing that applies to this, to exactly what you're describing, is Professor Quigley spoke about a thing called the tension of development. The tension of development. That when people are under stress, when people in a civilization are under stress, it causes all kinds of stresses and stuff. And eventually they start coming up with a solution to the problem. And he called that situation the tension of development. Hitler had an even more subtle approach, a very, very subtle thing that he said that I think almost nobody would ever have picked up. Hitler said that when you put different peoples under tremendous stress, there are those people who, when they're under tremendous stress, they collapse. But then there are those that you put them under tremendous stress, and out of them comes something positive. And I think he applied that mostly to whites, or to, I think he meant it for whites. I'd have to go look it up. But Hitler also spoke about that kind of concept. So the notion that we are having hard times and unpleasant times, when I look at Quigley and Hitler, etc., and history as a whole, I don't see hard times and hardship and nasty things as a bad thing, because for the most part, virtually every single time, whites, if it happens under certain conditions, whites are going to come out stronger and better. So I think that your analogy is definitely going to come to life. And I love the way that you speak about it as flipping a switch, that it's looking like there's nothing, it's looking like there's nothing, and then just suddenly out of the blue, boom, all of a sudden everyone's on the same page. I have looked at whites a lot under stress in South Africa, and I can tell you that what you're saying is true, and it's going to happen, make no mistake. And it even happens in more subtle ways, but what you want is you want to flip the big switch and everybody wakes up. And I know where you want to go, and I have every confidence it can and will happen if we do it right. There was also, just want to mention a little bit about white expansion, and because it ties up with colonialism and so forth. I saw a lady on Gab today where she was writing a thing, and she was writing about whites and everything. And then she went and she said, in the end, all of us must return to Europe. All of us must return to Europe. And I said to her, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. Hitler and Ben Clausen did not view life that way. And then just to go back to what you were talking about, basically slavery, colonialism, and conquest. I try to mention those things because they happened and you can't wish them away. And I try to explain them as best I can. I see what you're saying about shine the light on them so that people can see what they really were. And in that sense, you are saying that it's not, firstly, you are tackling the issue, the critical issue for Americans, that slavery is not a uniquely white American crime. That's the first thing. That slavery was done by everybody. Well, the same can be said of colonialism and conquest, is that everybody has done them, and when anybody gets the chance to do them, they do. And you only have to look at Jews in Israel today. Jews are basically colonizing a country that, to be honest with you, was never really Jewish to begin with. And if you look at blacks or anybody else, you'll see when any other race gets the chance to do slavery, they do slavery. Whenever they get the chance to colonize somebody and be their bosses, they do it. The Jews and the Muslims basically colonized the Spanish and the Portuguese for 800 years. And when it comes to conquest, everyone's done conquest. And just because in the wild competitive nature of life, that European people came out as the all-round winners of the game doesn't mean that we were the only ones doing it. Others were busy doing it to us too. You had Muslims invading not just Western Europe, Muslims invaded Eastern Europe. The Mongols were coming into Europe as well. And you can go and look all around the world. Everybody does it. It's only, you know, they moan and bitch about slavery of blacks going to North America, but they never talk about the fact that even more blacks ended up in Brazil. You know, so all of the stories that you have got about slavery, colonialism, conquest, all of those stories are merely modern propaganda versions which ignore all the other versions. You know, the Muslims did more slavery than anybody else. Muslims were busy with slavery right up until modern times. So, you know, I'm just also trying to point out maybe I haven't pointed it out quite in the way that you're talking, but I see what you're getting at, where you're saying shine the light on everything, show everybody everything, and let them realize that that is part of life. That has happened, and it could happen again. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, actually, when I have discussed this, and I will make another lesson about this, and at some point in time, I might make a little workbook, and hopefully we can talk about the little workbook activity books that I have for School of the West. I would not teach colonialism and conquest as though it was necessarily a bad thing. It is something that happened, and people have to understand the mindset of people in different stages of history. The way that I always looked at it as a kid is the way I look at it now, is that, wow, white people went around and did all that stuff? That's badass. It's like, you want me to feel bad that we had the technology and the grit and the courage to go to these other countries and kick everybody's ass on their home field? Are you freaking kidding me? That's awesome. look what we did. And also, if we wanted to kill all of you, we could have done that if we wanted to. And if we wanted all the black people to still be slaves, every single black person would be a slave in America right now, or in other countries where they had slaves. We could have done that if we wanted to, but we didn't. So you're welcome. And that's how white people they need to look at this. Like, we had all this power and we gave all this stuff to you, and you never give us thanks at all. You just want more and more and more and more and more, because you want to victimize white people. That's what you want. So take your attempted victimization of white people and shove it up your ass, because white people are going to wake up and realize that we could have been in charge all along, and we gave all of that away because we're trying to be nice, and you don't repay our niceness. You try to take advantage of us. So that kind of shit's coming to an end. That's how I would teach colonialism and conquest. let's see.
That's very interesting, if I may interject. Yes, yeah. You know, a handful of whites went to different continents and were doing all kinds of wild stuff and were doing things that had never been seen before. And I mean, all of this happened mostly under the European empires. And there are aspects of this that amaze me. Like, I was looking at the Boxer Rebellion just over a century ago. The Boxer Rebellion over a century ago, you had America, Germany, Britain, and I think some other Western countries were basically inside China kicking the Chinese asses. And they were kicking the Chinese asses because the Chinese were anti-white at the time. And that's the way that whites responded. And the fact that whites from around the globe had the power to walk around inside China kicking their butts, that pretty much says something, you know, the kind of power that we had, you know. And yes, we conquered all of Africa with tiny amounts of whites and did amazing things to Africa and to South America, Latin America, etc. And you're quite right. I I like your badass take on it. That if we want to be badass, we can, and we'll fucking hurt you. That is true. And also, the other thing to keep in mind is that it brings back the issue of power, Nietzsche and power, and that humans, you've got to be careful with humans. When humans become stronger, when other races become stronger, when Jews become stronger, when blacks become stronger, they will be nastier. And so, they are not thanking you for anything. They're not thanking you for anything, and they want more. That's Nietzsche talking right there, that all humans function on power. And the bad news is that the more power you let them have, the worse they become. This does not work like Christian morality. I'll be nice to you, then you'll be nice to me. No, you don't understand. The real world doesn't work like that. I am nice to you, the alien, and you, the alien, are going to repay it by trying to screw me over. That's how it's really going to work. So that's what I'll say. And just one other thing that I want to mention that I didn't mention about parasitism, that the Jews are parasites and the blacks are parasites. Why? Because if they could do better on their own, they wouldn't be living among us. They are with
Exactly.
us. They are with us because we are the best. That's why. And this, by the way, is a message that I think should be rammed home to Americans of all the whites the most. That white Americans should look at the whole issue of why are half of the world's Jews living in America? Why is half of world Jewry, literally half of world Jewry, living in the United States now? It's because you're the best, okay? That's why these Jewish rat bags are looking for the best place to live where they can get the greatest success, the most money, the most things. That's why they're in America. They are not in America because they love America. They're not in America because they like the values of Americans. They're not in America because they like white Americans. They are there because it's the place that they can get the most success. And they will be there for as long as they can do it. And then when they get kicked out of there and when they leave there one day, they will find another place where they'll go through the same old thing. In the 1930s, 50% of world Jewry was living in Russia, I think it was living in Russia. 50% of world Jewry was living in Russia in 1930. Now, where did half of world Jewry go? They're now living in the United States. These people are nomads. And they go to wherever they can find good grazing and a place where they can make a lot of money and live well. That's why they're in America. And don't and my most important message for Americans is don't ever believe, ever, ever, under any condition, believe that Jews are going to be loyal to America. They aren't loyal to any place at all. And they will leave, and they'll knife you in the back, and they'll fuck you over, and they'll leave you, and they will leave you when your country is on fire. They have no loyalty to anybody. These people are totally alien. They're completely a different, weirdo, bizarre alien race. So that's all that I'll say.
Yes, the Jews were in America, they were in Russia, they were in Poland, they were in Germany, they were in the Netherlands, they were in Spain. You just keep going back in time, they're in a different spot for different reasons. And like you said, you want to send that message to Americans, and to reiterate everything that I've been talking about, I can't do that if I start talking about what Hitler said about the Jews. Like, that doesn't work. So that's this whole thing that I'm doing with crafting the white well-being, putting our people's well-being first. That's the most moral thing to do. And if you want to be safe and have a happy life as a white person, you have to care about the group of whites. Okay, you get your individual well-being through the group well-being. This is what white people don't understand. Jews understand that very well. And also, if you know, talking about parasitism once again, successful parasites do not want their host to die. Parasites will keep the body alive of whatever animal, whatever organism that it's in for as long as possible. Now, some parasites are so detrimental to an animal or to an organism that it will eat the body, it'll eat the brain, etc., and it will take over parts of the brain. And some parasites, and I'm getting off on a tangent here, will have the animal crawl to water as it's dying, and an animal will die at the edge of the water, and the parasites will leave through the water, and it'll be in the water supply and then enter another body. So the life cycle of a parasite, that is their survival strategy to go from host to host. And I'm not saying that I want all Jews to be extinguished off the planet because they're parasites. I just want white people to wake up and say, wait a second, this is our country. We built it to our standards. It's for us, for ourselves and our posterity. You are an outsider. You are a different race. You are parasiting off of our people. You need to explain exactly what you're doing here right now, how you're going to benefit us, and explain to us why you're not in your own country. The British came and stole land from other people just to give it to you, you sons of bitches. Why aren't you over there in Israel? Okay, so those are valid questions. The last thing I'll say, the notes that I made from your previous videos is you were talking about you need to get the weapons into the hands of whites. And my response to that is, I know you're making an oversimplification in that, but I still think it's worth responding to. A lot of white people already have weapons. White Americans have shitloads of weapons. So it's not about getting weapons into the hands of whites. It's about getting the right beliefs into the minds of the whites. It's about getting the whites to understand who they are. It's like in the famous line in Hamlet, to be or not to be. That's the question. That is the freaking question. Are you a white person and part of the white race and part of the white team? Do you understand where the hell you came from? Or are you just a selfish individual? You're here just to, you know, entertain yourself as much as you can and eat a bunch of food and, you know, watch your sports ball and be a useless sack of shit. Is that what you're going to do? Because we've got too many of those useless sacks of shit. You need to realize what you are. You need to be something. You need to be part of us. And I would say that white people around the planet, they weren't defeated by weapons. Whites were defeated by words. Whites were defeated by words like racist, because it played on that simplicity, that intellectual simplicity that whites have, especially white Americans, and that easily manipulated morality that whites have, always trying to be the good people. So controlling our language will control our beliefs. So that's why I use those specific words like anti-white and biospirit and Western kind. And I say white well-being. I don't say white supremacy, you know, white domination or colonialism or whatever. I talk about white well-being. And our future generations will decide exactly what that looks like. You know, do they want to conquer people, or do they want to have their own country with a giant wall where no one bothers them, or do they want to have some non-whites in there? That's up to them. I just want our people to pull their heads out of their asses and have a generation of white kids that are being taught the truth as opposed to growing up inside of historical lies and anti-white propaganda. And before I go, Yon, I don't know if you want to say something, but I want to point out to people a video that I have on the School of the West website that might be interesting to them, which sort of encapsulates the theme that I've been talking about today.
Mention the video.
Okay. And I'll send you the link and maybe you'll be able to post it or something. Who knows? So the website is schoolofthewest.world. And on the website, there's different sections down in there. There's a different box for each section. And the white well-being section is on the top left when people scroll to that area. and it has videos that are specifically for the psychology of our kids. And under there, there's the Elite Teen series, which is a series for teenagers. And then the video that I'm referring to is called Playing the Villain. And it's called Playing the Villain because it refers to people advocating for white well-being under the cloak or the guise of, you know, Nazism or Hitlerism or something like that. Because in the mind of the typical white people, that's the villain. And when you start to play that villain or, you know, don that avatar, the normal whites will just instantly shut down and not listen to you. So they'll never receive your message. So that's the what that video is about. That's my speech.
Okay, got it. And I'll sort out the link. Then just one or two things I want to mention. You are saying, you mentioned the whole thing about guns in Africa. In Zimbabwe, it was guns would have made the fine, would have been an important thing. But I do understand that for most whites, especially Americans, that's not true and that's not the issue. That but in that particular scenario, they were mostly defenseless. But and when I was talking about guns, I meant like proper military equipment. So, but you know, because they were outnumbered 100-1. So
I will say, Jan,
The situation's not quite the same. But
for someone who grew up in Rhodesia, as it switched over to Zimbabwe, I know exactly what you're saying. And yes, in that scenario, with that theater of operations, I would agree 100%. You guys were actually fighting for your country and for your lives. That's a slightly different situation than what I was talking about globally with white people. Yeah.
Yes. Globally, whites are in no situation as bad as that. Correct. And globally, whites can get control of their culture and their politics without firing a shot. So that's the good news, that just by focusing on the thinking alone, you'll be able to knock everybody out of the game quickly. And it's all in the mind. I agree with you. A very nice thing that you are mentioning, that you're drumming into them, that is critical, is remember that individual well-being comes from group well-being. If the group is not healthy, you're going to suffer. So be aware of the fact that, you know, there are things that Jews and liberals used to say here in South Africa that I used to hear. I remember Jews saying things like, the color of everybody's money is the same. A black man's money. A black man. How does that grab you? Did that hit you, Brant?
It's just asinine. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Brant, I'm not joking with you. I heard this out of the mouths of Jews, and it's like the color of everybody's money is the same. A black man's. 10 rand from a black man is the same as 10 rand from a white man. And you know what? When you're dumb and you don't know how these sly scumbags are functioning, then you'll say, you know, actually, you're right. Eh? You're right. You know, you're right. You're right. But that kind of thinking is dangerous, dangerous thinking. And there are what I could call artificial equality. Let's call this thing artificial equality. When you try to compare blacks and whites and everybody, and you use things like that, then you can say a dollar from a black man is the same as a dollar from a white man. And then in a similar vein, you can say, when a black man votes for me, it's the same as a white man voting for me. It's an artificial equality, but if we had to be in a real situation, a life and death struggle, would a black man on my side be the same as a white man on my side? And Brant, that's where you get the real situation. And that artificial equality breaks down. And I think you could see it. Maybe you could see a bit of that in those videos I was doing. And that's the thing that I'm trying to warn everybody against, is don't think that just because America's got 40 million blacks, that 40 million blacks in America makes America stronger in the same way as if you had 40 million white children. Okay. If you replace those 40 million blacks with 40 million whites of the next generation, there's going to be a difference. Okay. You're going to get way more value out of them. So you must, artificial equality is a dangerous concept. And, you've got to be careful. Jews will use that.
So, yeah, John, if someone said that to me, I would say you're trying to do that so that whites don't have any racial in-group preference, and you're only doing that inside of white countries because you're anti-white. You're trying to get whites to lower their guards, to open up their countries to others, to think of everyone as, you know, being the same and having the same interests, but that's not true. Well, we have different interests. We have different biospirits. We want different things out of life. We make totally different countries. This country is made by white people. You're in my country as a guest, I would say, because you're not a real American. You're a paper American. And you're only saying that thing about the money because you're anti-white. And you need to explain to me why you're anti-white. The conversation isn't going past that. You can take your money analogy and shove it straight up your ass. Why are you in my country and why are you anti-white? And the conversation doesn't need to go beyond that, because that's what's really going on.
Absolutely. Dead on. So, I also wanted to just address another topic that's come up several times, that you've mentioned several times, that I want to just maybe flesh out a little bit. You were talking about people looking for entertainment, sitting in front of the TV, watching football. White South Africans also used to do all those kinds of things. You know, everybody was into rugby. Everyone, oh, it's Saturday, we've got to go watch the rugby match, Springbok rugby, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, watching TV and all that. And when I look back on these things now, I say to myself, you know what? Life was good. And life was good and soft, and capitalism and only focusing on business and money is what brought us there. And that is why white South Africans were like that. That's why white Americans are like that. That's probably why whites in other countries are like that, is because the whole focus of life was on capitalism, money, and business. I used to, there were people in our family who lived, because my family was split between Rhodesia and South Africa. So the South African segment of our family, they just kept thinking about business and money and business. And some of them, a few of them, were pretty good at it. And they only looked at life in the way that Donald Trump looks at life. Donald Trump looks at, oh, the deals, the art of the deal. I make deals, you know, and that's mm-hmm. capitalism speaking there. But the problem is, Brandt, and this is a deeper discussion, but it's a discussion that I started having with people in the late 1980s. The discussion starts becoming about capitalism. And can capitalism solve all the problems? And the older I get and the more I've looked at life, the more I'm telling you it cannot happen. Capitalism is not the solution to all the problems. And loving business and loving the rich and loving all money dealings as the basis of life is not going to solve the problems. You must return to institutions, to, let's call it, white socialist institutions that whites always had that aren't related to money. In other words, family, children, all kinds of forms of organization and schooling, and, you know, the boys going to the Boy Scouts or the military or this or that. There are lots and lots and lots of things in Western civilization, including government, the law, the police, all those kinds of things. All those kinds of things function in a sort of socialist environment, not a business environment. And people start saying, ah, everything should be done by business. No, no. There's a limit to what you can do with business. And worshiping money as the solution to all of life's problems is a dangerous, dangerous thing. That is something that Jewry loves. And they like that approach to life. And if you leave them, they'll turn everything into a business, absolutely everything. And you mustn't think like that. And when I look at whites who are sitting, let's say the couch potatoes, who are sitting, they're fat, they're bloated, they lie in front of the TV, they're busy drinking Coke and all that stuff. That kind of life, that comes from capitalism. And that is from when you forget. That is from when you are not taught the importance of government, and you are not taught the importance of history, and you're not, there are lots and lots of other things that are missing in your mind, and your life has been turned into, I must just go and get a job, earn as much money as I can, watch football on the weekend, go back to work on Monday, that's all I need to worry about. And that is bad for you, and you need to get out of that life. And you know, the Germans in the time of pre-Hitler, you know, Hitler and them were starting to look at Nietzsche and philosophers, and they were spreading thoughts about history and philosophy. You know, you had soldiers reading Nietzsche, that kind of thing. That is where we got to go to. That's where we got to go to. We got to get away from this notion that money solves all of the problems of life. And also, it leads to many other issues. That these people are sitting around, bunch of couch potatoes, and then they start wondering, what is life about? You know, maybe life is just how much money I can make, and do I have any loyalty to the civilization or to this nation, or do I even care? And that's wrong, because what you are trying to do, which is what Hitler was trying to do also, is you are trying to show people that there are deeper things, more important things, and that you also need motivation for life, and that every man, every woman has got a role to play. And if you do not play your racial and sexual role in life, then things are going to go more downhill, and that everybody's got a task, but that there are lots of hard tasks that need to be done. Let's call it lots of hard socialist tasks that need to be done. And when they are done, the group and the nation is going to be much, much stronger. So I thought I'd just address that.
Yeah, yeah. People are far too selfish right now. They're a bunch of navel gazers, as they would say in England. Everyone's just, you know, looking down at their feet, looking at their smartphone, just thinking about themselves. There's the selfishness and the individualism in the white race right now is probably at an all-time high. People need to realize that you're not the most important thing on the freaking planet. You're part of a team. You're part of a teamwork. You're only here because of a lot of other people, millions of other people that came before you, that put in blood, sweat, and tears and slowly progressed our civilization over time, that now you're benefiting from. And what I used to tell kids when I was teaching them is, if people started getting an attitude in class, I'd say, look, when you were born, you were just pissing and shitting on yourself, and you were so useless that you couldn't even hold your head up. And you're only here now because your, you know, mommy and daddy took care of you. And there's a whole civilization behind them, which put them in the position where they are, so they could take care of you, and you had food, and you had medicine, and now you're getting education, etc. So if you think you're cool, if you think you're really, really important, you're not. So you need to get over yourself right now and shut up and listen to the lesson, because you're part of something much bigger than what you think you are. And this is what people are missing right now.
That is very brilliant. I agree with every single word that came out your mouth. and I didn't do it because I'm afraid that you'd tell me to shut up. I genuinely agreed with every flipping word and the way that you said it. I like your takedown. Very, very wonderful. Very wonderful. People need to understand that you are part of something great and awesome. And if you don't play your role, this freaking thing is going down and this huge disaster is coming. No, I love that.
Yeah, and it's up to us. There's no heroes coming to save us. There's no billionaires because billionaires don't give a shit about us. The billionaires should give a shit about their billions and how many more billions they can get. So it's up to us to get it done.
Absolutely, absolutely. And another thing, Brant, that I'm looking at like from an economic point of view is that there are so many things. There are so many, many things in Western civilization that are solved without money. We do many, many things without even thinking about it, and we don't sit and say to ourselves, do you know, we are solving this problem without spending 1 cent. You know, take, for example, the concept of trust. Trust is a perfect example of trust solves so many problems. There used to be a time where whites used to be able to take pride in doing a business deal based on a handshake. Two men come together, they agree on something, shake their hands, and that's it. No lawyers were involved, no paperwork involved, and that is what it is. And if one of them breaks the trust, then the other one will just tell the rest of society, beware of Fred. Fred's a crook. Fred's a liar. Just don't waste your time with Fred. And that simple mechanism did not need courts and lawyers and high courts and courts of appeal and all kinds of junk processes. That was a simple system, and that system works. And many of those processes, if we bring those same old values and processes back, those things will fix so much, so quickly, so easily. And this also brings me to the issue of, you know, stereotyping people. Oh, that guy's a Jew. So you know, what does Jew mean? Jew means watch out for this bastard. He's an alien. He's dangerous, etc. And all those simple little things that we had solve the problems. So if you teach the kids right, and you like stereotyping, you know, Jews and liberals have gone on a thing where they say, don't stereotype people. You know, not everyone's like that. No. Stereotyping worked like a charm. It worked like a freaking charm. Just teach your children, you know. You just, all you need to do is get the baby to say Jew bad, Jew evil. And then if the baby says, oh, Jew, then the kid knows, you know, we can turn this whole flipping thing around. We can turn this whole flipping thing around. We had all the answers. They've just managed to take us away from our old answers, and our old answers worked, if I may say so.
It's all about the people. If you don't have your people, then you don't have anything. Nothing else matters.
Absolutely.
If we don't have our people in our civilization, the form of government or the money or anything else, none of that matters. So our people come first. And have a nice day, everyone.
Excellent. Well, Hitler would agree with you. You know, the people, the civilization, that's more important than the individual, and that's correct. Thank you very much for listening today. I hope that you learned something new today. Look after yourselves and take care. We'll be chatting again soon. Give up, my friend.
If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win every fight you win.